I'm John Batchelor. Gregory Koppel is here, and we're commenting on the future, the immediate future, the hardest to see, 30 years, 50 years, the balance of this century. We've been speaking of middle powers and small powers reorganizing themselves because of the absence of the great power, the United States. There are other great powers coterminously, either potential or memory. I read a quote from Foreign Affairs, most recent, December issue of 2025. This is an article by Dr. Caleb Pomeroy, professor at the Department of Political Science at the Monk School of Global Affairs and Public Policy, University of Toronto. He writes, "With great power comes great insecurity. Why stronger states are more fearful than weaker ones." He adds this, I'm following Gregory's reporting in Defense and Foreign Affairs. "The strong, it turns out, are far more likely than the weak to skip careful reasoned analysis when making decisions. Instead, they assess threats from the gut and shoot from the hip. While the weak know they must think critically to navigate their surroundings, the strong imagine they can rely on stereotypes and other mental shortcuts to get by. As a result, the powerful view the world in bleak and oversimplified terms, breeding suspicion and anxiety." Gregory, I'd watch this movie. Where are we going with this?
Well, it does. We do see, in fact, now this rise of national level paranoia around the world. And it's strange that that nationalism is one of the tools used to project this. It's also equally important to note that nationalism is the tool which the weaker states used to defend against this. So what my overall article was, which was entitled "The Imperial Drumbeat Quickens," is that we are looking at the world literally being less hypocritical about the way that it is going back into the imperialist form of power projection. In other words, states absorb their neighbors and they, if you like, colonize one way or another other parts of the world so that they can build a defensible system, one where they can guarantee their food supply, guarantee their wealth through closed and preferential trade circumstances and the like. So we're now going back to that. And we have to remember that literally all of the states in the world today, with very few exceptions, and Japan is, if you like, one of the sort of exceptions, are empires. But even Japan is an empire. It was a lot of smaller warring states which gradually came together and abandoned their tribal nationalism and became a greater nation state, in other words, an empire. The United States became an empire by conquering much of everything west of the 13 original colonies and then expanding into other areas, seizing part of the Caribbean, seizing, for example, Hawaii, without which the United States would not be a global power. So all of these things are reemerging with less hypocrisy, and people are going to make their equations either on national security terms or on seizing assets, whether it's raw materials and energy and the like, or whether it's to pre-position forces or to control, if you like, even uplinks to satellites and so on. So really, we're going back into that whole internationally or globally competitive, mutually competitive world. And as a result, a lot of the structures of the 20th century are going to disappear. Bearing in mind that in the 20th century itself, we saw a move from a lot of the empires shedding their colonies. Africa, for example, seeing sovereign independence, much of Latin America becoming solidified, much of the South Pacific and Asia becoming solidified as new nation states. Even the colonial states, which became sovereign in 1945 through 1960 and later, are themselves agglomerations of different tribal nations. So we're going to see a lot of reworking of what defines the nation state in various parts of the world over the next decade or two decades. So in other words, it's going to be a huge amount of upheaval. Borders are meaning less and less. We look at the recent reaffirmation, if you like, of the 1960 colonial borders between Somaliland, former British Somaliland, and former Italian Somaliland, which had been seized in World War II by Great Britain. When they became independent, they joined. Now they split. They split apart again, and now it's a subject of great contention. But there are new states literally being brought to the fore in this cauldron.
What is the immediate future to look like? The great powers. Can we agree upon great powers? Can we see them now, or are they forming? China looks like one, but there are major problems. Russia looks like one, major problems. The U.S. certainly wants to be a great power, but we have major problems. Chiefly, half the nation despises the chief executive elected by more than half the nation. So I'd say that was a problem. Europe, is it to be a power?
Well, I don't think you can look on Europe as being a power, as a unified state of Europe. That's certainly what the European Union has been attempting to do. It was attempting to literally create that as a new imperial entity. That's failed. What we'll go back to seeing are the sovereign European states, maybe some more or less so. There will be some of the older names emerging in Europe as well as elsewhere around the world, and they will go about their adventures and their national security defenses as they see fit. The European Union modeled itself literally on the Soviet Union and to a degree on the United States, thinking they could just bring people together and create, as the Soviets used to call it, new Soviet man, or the U.S., the melting pot, creating a new type of individual, an American identity or U.S. identity. So we're going to see that. I don't see Europe as being a single great power. Yes, they will cooperate with each other as they did in the 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th centuries. But where it goes from there, it's going to be very much more fluid. So essentially, we're entering a period of global fluidity. And the question is, how much violence will that bring? We could get away with seeing minimal amounts of power as people in various societies attempt to reposition themselves short of going to war. Going to war, even for a great power as the Japanese Empire once was, can itself be very, very problematic. Japan could be seen in hindsight to have killed itself when it invaded the United States at Pearl Harbor in December 7th, 1941. So, you know, it's not that you can do anything you want as a great power, especially if you've got internal divisions. And it was internal divisions which essentially defeated the United States over the Vietnam War issue. So you could argue that Vietnam, albeit supported by Moscow and Beijing, literally defeated the Soviet Union by defeated the United States by 1990, that sort of period. No, sorry, 1970s rather. So you've got this situation where having enormous power is not necessarily the only answer. You pointed out the internal divisions in the United States. There are massive internal divisions in literally every country of the world right now. One of the few which is less divided, perhaps, is India. But that can get pretty divided pretty quickly, as we've seen in the past as well. Right now, they're on the upswing. So, okay, let's watch that. But no state is immune from this kind of corruption internally, this, you know, the erosion or corrosion of power. And in fact, what we're seeing now is that the United States is the greatest military and economic power in the world today, unchallenged,
right,
largely because of the weakness internally of everyone else.
The way I read Dr. Pomeroy, the quote that I read out from Foreign Affairs, is that great powers shoot from the hip. We shoot from the hip, Gregory. We don't. He's saying that we do not analyze carefully the way, say, Denmark would analyze carefully.
Absolutely.
Russia shoots from the hip. China shoots from the hip. And that doesn't foreclose on violence, does it? I mean,
absolutely not. In fact, it's more likely to lead to it. And that's why right now with the People's Republic of China, acting as though it was a superpower, but without being one, could well get itself into a military conflict, which would absolutely destroy what is left of a unified China.
And the Europeans, if I understand correctly what they're up to, they're putting troops, different countries are participating by deploying troops into Greenland. What are they thinking? They're going to shoot? Is that their analysis?
No, what their analysis is will the U.S. dare to shoot? Because the European states with their forces in Greenland are not intending to shoot anybody except in self-defense. So will the United States cause that to happen? And it could well do so because President Trump does not like to be challenged.
You mentioned in your article that the United Nations came together as a place to talk out our differences. Gregory, nobody's even talking about talking out our differences.
Correct.
They're in the ceremony showing a special forces marching up the dock. I watched the video from Nook asking, why are you here? He wouldn't answer. It was like he was in combat mode already.
Yes.
Now, that's just downright Serbian provocative. That's what that is. That's inviting trouble.
There's no question about it. And unnecessarily, the United States has not outlined the threat that it's trying to avert by seizing Greenland, and it's merely antagonized people. And the threat which it briefly portends is there is not there. The People's Republic of China disintegrating, the Russian Federation not interested in a conflict with the United States and not doing what is vaguely being alleged is doing. So the question is this one of those assessing threats from the gut and shooting from the hip? Yes, it is. What we're not seeing is whether there are any real or substantial motives behind this other than the seizure, if you like, of Greenlandic resources, which are not worth getting into a world war over.
If the Europeans break with us, which is apparent tonight, right now, okay, Kiev is done, correct? Done.
Correct. Correct.
And the barrage that Russia's launched in its last 24 hours, taking out their heat, their electricity, their power, the whole country, they're done. They've been told they're done. Is that the way to read it right now?
I would say so, and it would strengthen Russia's hand, not just in Ukraine, but also with regard to Turkey and Iran as well, as well as making life very, very difficult for the Central Asian states.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. There are no answers here. There's the future. We can't see it, but it's there. And my favorite science fiction quote, the future's already here. It's just not evenly distributed. We're looking for what the future looks like. We're going to turn to the past, however. Our favorite report of the week, the King Charles III report. Gregory Copley, I'm John Batchelor.